Good afternoon, and welcome to this news conference sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. You'll be hearing from four speakers today. Before we introduce them as a group and then individually, I want to go through instructions about how the Q&A period will work. During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star and then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star and then 2. Again, it's star and then 1 to ask a question. I'll repeat those instructions about how members of the news media can pose questions at the start of the Q&A period. As I mentioned, you'll be hearing from four speakers today: Sarah Barzak, Program Director for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy; Doug Koplow, Report Author and Founder of EarthTrek; Max Chang, Report Author and Associate with Synapse Energy Economics; and Mindy Goldstein, Director of the Turner Environmental Law Clinic at Emory University. Let's begin now with our first speaker, Sarah Barzak, Program Director for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Barzak, and I am the High Risk Energy Choices Program Director for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, also known as SACE, S-A-C-E for short. Thank you for attending this news conference. For those not familiar with our organization, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy has been a leading voice for energy reform to protect the quality of life and treasured places in the Southeast for over 25 years. Founded in 1985, SACE is the only regional organization primarily focused on developing clean energy solutions throughout the Southeast. We are here today to discuss with you the Vogtle Loan Guarantee. Documents newly acquired under a Freedom of Information Act request, or FOIA, and subsequent litigation show that Solyndra-like problems are plaguing the controversial $8.3 billion federal loan guarantee conditionally committed for the construction of two nuclear reactors, Vogtle 3 and 4 in Georgia, according to a new analysis by Synapse Energy Economics and EarthTrek for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Available at bit.ly/no-nuke-loans, all lowercase, and currently featured on our website, cleanenergy.org, the new report and supplemental memo are based on hundreds of Department of Energy, DOE, documents dated between June 2008 and July 2012. The analysis provides extensive new information about problems with the handling of the loan guarantee process for the Vogtle project, the adequacy of the financial terms for the federal loan guarantees, risks to U.S. taxpayers not fully addressed in DOE's credit subsidy analysis, and indications of political interference with key financial decisions related to the conditional loan guarantees. Our legal counsel, Mindy Goldstein, will be the closing speaker and will provide a summary of the legal proceedings over the last several years. We also have a timeline you can refer to that is listed at the beginning of the online document library. In short, over the past several years, we have continuously dealt with an astounding level of censorship for documents that were partial in scope and submitted on an extremely tardy basis. This new analysis consists of a concise report and short memo that analyzes hundreds of documents that the DOE has released to us through our FOIA litigation, many of them still so heavily redacted as to be nearly useless. The memo, for instance, gives us the most recent glimpse we could receive of the proposed terms and conditions for the loan guarantee for Georgia Power. I would like to thank co-authors Doug Koplow and Max Chang for their difficult work, and Friends of the Earth for their support. A tremendous thanks to Mindy Goldstein, the director of Emory University School of Law's Turner Environmental Law Clinic, and her students. This has been a multi-year, very complicated and cumbersome legal process. Thanks to my SACE colleague, Mandy Hancock, who has worked to get these many documents uploaded into an online library that makes this information accessible to you, the media, along with the public and other concerned stakeholders. Please note that on page 1 of the full report, you will see two links listed. One is the full listing of documents that we've received over quite a number of years, and the other are excerpts from the documents referenced in numerous footnotes in the report. The bottom line is this: U.S. taxpayers are still being denied timely access to the information that could be used to better assess the risk to their pocketbooks posed by the Vogtle loan guarantee. Despite the fact that President Obama announced the Vogtle taxpayer finance loan guarantee way back on February 16th of 2010 amid much fanfare, nearly all meaningful details of the deal have remained shrouded in secrecy. And nearly 3 years later, the offer has not been finalized. The latest extension for the possible loan guarantee recipients is now June of 2013. And SAFE fundamentally believes that this loan guarantee should not be finalized due to the unfair risks it poses to taxpayers, the poor management of the program overall, and the fact that we now know that the Vogtle project is experiencing problems resulting in delays and cost increases. The Vogtle loan guarantee puts nearly 16 times as much at stake for taxpayers when compared to Solyndra. Taxpayers cannot afford an $8.3 billion gamble when the odds are stacked against them as badly as they are here. The very large exposure to losses for U.S. taxpayers should the Vogtle project go awry, along with the known complexities of building two new reactors, underscore the importance of an objective and unbiased review of the project, its borrowers, and the appropriate credit subsidy level. Political interference increases fiscal risk because political pressure can supplant economic and financial assessments in driving funding decisions and terms. We encourage you to review and make use of the redacted and partially unredacted files, which are referenced in the report and memo and that we've worked hard to make available online. The clear foot-dragging and improper handling by DOE of the SAFE FOIA request continues to provide us with proof of the validity of the criticisms set out by many, including the U.S. Government Accountability Office report from back in 2010, which was titled, Further Actions Are Needed to Improve DOE's Ability to Evaluate and Implement the Loan Guarantee Program. The GAL found then that the DOE Loan Guarantee Program is inadequately planned and executed, lacks objective performance goals, and provides preferential treatment to nuclear loan guarantee applications over other types of applications. The new report and memo from Synapse and EarthTrack being discussed today does not make it appear that the loan guarantee program has improved in any of these categories. What does this all mean for taxpayers and others concerned about government secrecy? This is too large a sum of taxpayers' money being spent on too risky a project for there to be this much secrecy. Let us be reminded that this is the first award of what could be billions of dollars more in federal subsidies for the nuclear industry. Continuing to hide the financial ball, so to speak, from the public for the first new nuclear reactor project in the United States is a bad start. As we have stated before, we need openness and transparency. Obama's Department of Energy, Southern Company, and the public power companies involved in the Vogtle loan guarantees need to set the record straight and tell the truth about what is going on here, that they are socializing the risk and privatizing the profits for big power companies. I am pleased to be joined today by Doug Koplow, report author and founder of EarthTrack, Max Chang, report author and associate with Synapse Energy Economics, and Mindy Goldstein, director of the Turner Environmental Law Clinic at Emory University School of Law and an attorney for SAFE. That concludes my opening remarks. I look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you. Again, that was Sarah Barzak, Program Director for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Let's proceed to our second speaker, Doug Koplow, report author and founder of EarthTrack.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be with you. I am the founder of EarthTrack, which is a consulting firm in Cambridge, Mass., and my work focuses on government subsidies to energy, including those provided through government loan and loan guarantee programs. Along with Max Chang of Synapse Energy Economics, we reviewed many hundreds of pages of released documents and emails related to DOE's pending loan guarantee to the Vogtle project. Our goal was to learn more about DOE's due diligence and risk assessment, the terms offered on the loan guarantees, and potential conflicts of interest among involved parties. Using authority granted to it by Title 17 of the Energy Policy Act of 2005, DOE signed conditional commitment letters in February 2010 for $8.33 billion in loan guarantees for the construction of the proposed Vogtle Units 3 and 4. The program subsidizes borrowing costs by accessing low-interest government debt and by enabling borrowers to use more of that inexpensive debt in their capital structure than private markets would allow. Loan durations and principal repayment terms may also be more favorable. There are five separate conditional commitment agreements on the project, one each for Georgia Power and Oglethorpe Power, and three for the Municipal Electric Authority of Georgia, or MEAG, which set up three separate investment vehicles. Each agreement has somewhat differing terms, and final loan terms have not yet been signed. As noted earlier, Two documents related to Georgia Power that were recently released indicate negotiations and changes have continued at least through the middle of 2012. It is important to note that the more than $8.33 billion on offer is not a normal government loan. It is by far the largest commitment DOE has made under its Title 17 loan program. Further, although the program has sometimes been compared to the U.S. Export-Import Bank, or Ex-Im Bank for short, a main source of export credit, the VOTA loan is actually far larger than the deals Ex-Im Bank does as well. Over the past 5 years and hundreds of deals, less than 15 Ex-Im Bank financings were for amounts in excess of even $1 billion. A comparison of the deal to venture capital funding of energy investment is even more striking. This single deal is $3.5 billion larger than all venture capital funding to energy and industry, even during the peak funding year of 2008. Under the best of circumstances, achieving a successful outcome for taxpayers from the VOTA loan would be challenging. However, the release documents indicate a range of worrying problems. Outsourcing of key expertise is one. While some external input is useful in order to bolster DOE's expertise, for example, review of the deal by external credit rating agencies, the release documents suggest that virtually all key tools used to assess project risk by DOE were developed and held by private companies, and that individuals outside of the government were relied on for most tasks related to modifying and interpreting model runs. Credit subsidy estimates are a second major issue of concern. A key taxpayer protection of the Title 17 program is an upfront credit subsidy fee that borrowers must pay to the government before getting their loans. The payment is intended to compensate taxpayers for the expected risk of loss on the financing. Credit models were central in estimating the amount of these fees. Disagreement between DOE and the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, on key model runs was evident in the documents, though redactions precluded assessing both the range of disagreements and how they were resolved. Further, released emails show that the credit models were undergoing significant modifications even 8 months after DOE signed conditional commitments and released the credit subsidy estimates to borrowers that those models were being used to generate. Model results are also sensitive to the assumed recovery rates should there be a default. The less one assumes defaulted assets are worth, the higher the upfront credit subsidy payment needed to protect taxpayers. Though actual inputs were redacted, there is clear disagreement on the appropriate values, with Georgia Power estimating recoveries at 87%, whereas the U.S. Congressional Budget Office pegged historical post-default recoveries on the type of debt they deemed most similar to the proposed loans at only 37%. These different inputs would be expected to produce wildly disparate credit subsidy values. The actual credit subsidy range that DOE provided to Georgia Power was a mere 0.5 to 1.5% of the authorized borrowing amount. Even assuming the high-end value here, a payment of $52 million, the credit subsidy payment would boost average interest rates over the life of the loan by only 1/8 of 1%, an astonishingly small risk premium for the first new reactor to be built in the U.S. in decades. Credit subsidy figures for MEAG and Oglethorpe are higher, ranging from just under 5% to a high of just over 11% of the loan amount. However, it's notable that even the top end of this range is still less than the average 12.5% credit subsidy that the Government Accountability Office estimated last year applied to other completed DOE loan guarantees. DOE has confirmed recently that the 2010 credit subsidy values have not changed. This is despite changing loan terms, market conditions, and the emergence of delays and cost overages in the first phase of the VOTA's construction. Any losses from underestimating the credit subsidy payment will fall on taxpayers, not on the borrowers. Release documents indicate that payments of principal by VOTA borrowers have also been backloaded, a structure that increases the duration of taxpayer subsidies to the venture, as well as repayment risk to taxpayers. For Georgia Power, loan principal is not repaid at all until the very end, years 29 and 30 of the loan. A so-called balloon structure that OMB was not happy about in an email requested that DOE not repeat. Oglethorpe and MEAG are repaying some principal during the loan term, but at a rate assuming a 40-year amortization on a 30-year loan. Residual debt in year 30 would need to be financed, potentially risky if the project has not gone as hoped. Another issue is that DOE has extended the conditional commitment letters multiple times, most recently into mid-2013. The department's continued willingness to extend the agreement period would be expected to weaken its ability to achieve stronger protections for taxpayers in the final loan agreement, since borrowers are able to retain their option on a subsidized loan at little cost or risk. Based on released documents pertaining to Georgia Power, many clauses of the conditional commitment letter appear to have been renegotiated over the ensuing 2 years. Material disagreements, such as on the amount and type of collateral, remain. Redactions continue to make full analysis difficult, but there are multiple indications of political involvement with specific borrowers and specific aspects of the loan agreements as well. Many of the emails containing this information were actually fully redacted by DOE in its initial responses to SAFE, and only subsequent litigation resulted in their disclosure. My colleague Max Chang will discuss these in more detail. Thank you, and this concludes my opening statement. I look forward to taking your questions after all the speakers have spoken.
Thank you, and again, that was Doug Koplow, report author and founder at EarthTrack. Let's proceed now to our third speaker, Max Chang, report author and associate at Synapse Energy Economics.
Thank you. As Doug mentioned, in our review of the documents, we found several instances of political involvement in emails associated with the loan guarantee process. I want to note that the full quotes are available through the online link library that Sarah mentioned at the beginning of this call. We've grouped these emails into five categories, and I'll read some excerpts from those categories. One, indications of pressure to expedite the Vogtle loan guarantee. And I want to note this is an email from Kelly Collier from the DOE Director of Credit Policy of the Loan Program Office, in an email sent to financial staff and contractors on October 13, 2009. Quote, as you know, we are under a tight timeline to move our first nuclear power deal forward, period. That project is Vogtle 3 and 4, quote. Two, indications of involvement at the political level in the Department of the Treasury. In an email from Ken Sestari from the Loan Program Office to Preston Atkins at Treasury, Ken requested Preston to phone him in order for DOE to, quote, close out the consultations with Treasury, unquote. Mr. Atkins responded in a subsequent email, quote, the matter is currently at the political level within Treasury. We intend to respond later today. When will the Credit Review Board meet tomorrow? Will it discuss both Vogtle and redaction? Three, indications of involvement by the Secretary of Energy regarding the Georgia Power terms in an email from Matthew Winters, a senior advisor of the loan programs, to Jonathan Silver, the DOE Loan Program Office Executive Director, quote, today was the deadline for Southern Company to sign, redacted, the conditional commitment letter for Vogtle Nuclear Project. Before signing two redacted paragraphs, I'm told by Brandon that this course of action was signed off by the Secretary and was conveyed to Southern, period. Regarding the MEAG terms, in an email from Carl Lyons to Nick Whitcomb of DOE and Peter Fitzgerald of Chadbourne and Park, quote, Nick and Peter, MEAG CEO Bob Johnson got a call on Friday from Secretary Chu, and they discussed the progress that had been made with Southern and where we stood on our term sheet negotiation. They agreed to talk again on Tuesday about the major issues that are still open between us. Four, indications of involvement by the White House. From a December 27, 2010 email from Richard Myers, Vice President, Policy Development of the Nuclear Energy Institute, to Jonathan Silver, quote, first, just to follow up on our conversation before the holidays with Marv Fertel, we have, as you suggested, requested a meeting with appropriate White House staff. The initial reaction was less than enthusiastic. We met with one of your CEOs a couple weeks ago. Why do we need another meeting? We'll keep trying, though. There was a time I thought they would not want a second nuclear project to follow in the footsteps of Calvert Cliffs. Now I'm not sure they really care. Quote. And in another email regarding after-hours contact information for senior executives at Shaw, Jonathan Silver writes, "We didn't deal with Shaw. The White House did." And five, indications of high-level engagement within the Department of Labor. Quote, "However, it is very important that we get as much clarity as possible by early next week. If it would be helpful to have a high-level call from DOE to DOL, please let me and Scott know so that we can arrange it." Quote, this is an email from Susan Richardson, Chief Counsel of the Loan Program Office, to Janet Barcy of DOE on December 2nd, 2009, in reference to Georgia Power's request to be exempted from prevailing wage requirements. We are not alleging, nor do we have sufficient information to fully assess any improper conduct. However, it is clear that top officials are engaged and interested in trying to make the Vogtle loan guarantee work. Given the findings of various reviews of the Solyndra loan process, the massive scale of the Vogtle conditional loan guarantee, its complexity, and the limited experience of DOE in handling loans of this size, any hint of political involvement is a particular concern. We believe it is also important to factor the current construction progress when analyzing the loan guarantee process, particularly since the loan guarantee agreement has not yet been finalized. We currently know the following. Approximately $930 million of project costs are in dispute between the owners and the Vogtle contractors based on statements filed in Georgia Power's third quarter 10-Q. In early December 2012, the Vogtle project's construction monitor testified that he anticipates the project will not meet the original 2016 and 2017 completion schedule. And finally, DOE has once again extended the loan guarantee negotiation window. It is unclear how the construction delays have impacted the local loan guarantee negotiations. In our analysis of the Vogtle project conditional loan guarantees, we have been concerned that DOE's estimates for the credit subsidy fees may be too low. We remain concerned since the updated documents do not contain any updated information on the credit subsidy fee, even though this payment is the main venue to protect taxpayers in the case of default. Through our review, we have learned much about the Vogtle conditional loan guarantee. However, given the volume of information and the large amount of redaction in the documents, much still remains uncertain. That said, it also presents an opportunity to investigate additional topics associated with the conditional loan guarantees. These include, conduct further analysis of term sheets to examine all clauses for which terms vary across the borrowers. For example, MEAG's three special purpose vehicles, SPVs, have different loan-to-eligible cost ratios without detailed explanation. A more exhaustive assessment of the differences between the SPVs and possibly reasons for the differences could generate interesting insights into the risks identified by DOE. Analyze power purchase agreements and long-term contract details of MEAG and Oglethorpe Power Corporation to assess possible repayment risks for the two borrowers or operating risks to the guarantor municipalities should reactor costs escalate. Map transitions of key personnel involved with the Vogtle loan guarantee process over time to identify any migration of staff from the public sector to private sector and the loss of key expertise. For example, Kelly Collier, who oversaw the credit review process at DOE, has since moved to the Office of Management and Budget to oversee energy programs, a position that would presumably include OMB's review of the DOE conditional loan guarantee on which she worked on. And that, thank you. This concludes my opening statement.
Thank you. Again, that was Max Chang, report author and associate with Synapse Energy Economics. Let's proceed now to our fourth and final speaker making brief opening comments, Mindy Goldstein, director of the Turner Environmental Law Clinic at Emory University.
Hello, my name is Mindy Goldstein, and I'm the director of the Turner Environmental Law Clinic at Emory Law School. I'll try to keep this short so we can get to your questions. The clinic is representing the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy as it looks into the Federal Loan Guarantee Program and the Department of Energy's conditional commitment of $8.3 billion for the Plant Vogtle project. As you've already heard from Sarah, Max, and Doug, in March 2010, using the Freedom of Information Act, we began requesting information about the Federal Loan Guarantee Program. Nearly three years have passed since then, and we have submitted 4 FOIA requests to the Department of Energy asking for records related to the loan guarantees. As Sarah mentioned, a timeline is available to walk you through these requests. And as Max and Doug discussed, the documents we received in response to these requests shed a lot of light on the Vogtle loan guarantees. Receiving these documents, however, was not easy. Throughout the years, DOE has been reluctant to release information about the Vogtle loan guarantees, regularly missing the deadlines it set for document production. And when documents were eventually released, they were often so heavily redacted that they were meaningless. This practice of delayed response and heavy withholdings first became apparent when DOE failed to fully and timely respond to SACE's March 2010 FOIA request for loan guarantee documents. Given the inadequacy of the response, we turned to litigation to ensure that the Department of Energy complied with its obligations under FOIA. Most of the documents used in today's report were obtained through a court order and eventual settlement of this litigation. I'm excited to state that years after SACE filed its initial FOIA request, virtually all the terms and conditions of the loan guarantee term sheets, including the credit subsidy fees, have been made available to the public. Numerous other correspondence documents are also now available for public review. As set forth more fully in today's report, and as just touched upon by Doug and Max, the documents released in response to the 2010 FOIA request provide much insight into DOE's initial offer to the power companies. Of course, much has changed since 2010. DOE encountered problems with other loan guarantees, including Solyndra. The Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster plagued Japan, reminding the world of the risks associated with nuclear power. And construction at Plant Vogtle lagged behind schedule while costs soared. SACE's April 2012 FOIA request was aimed at uncovering what changes, if any, DOE made to the loan guarantee terms and conditions in light of these new realities. The supplemental memo released today analyzes DOE's partial response to this FOIA request. As the memo explains, not much has changed. The credit subsidy fees remain the same, and while the loan guarantee terms are still being negotiated, there's been no obvious attempt by the agency to steer from its initial course. Of note, DOE has continued to fight against transparency. The department's response to SACE's 2012 FOIA request remains incomplete, and the document it has released are extensively redacted. We are troubled by the Department of Energy's continued reluctance to make these documents available to the public, particularly given the magnitude of the loan guarantees. SACE remains committed to pursuing all avenues necessary to ensure these important documents come to light. Thank you, and I look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you. Again, that was the opening statement of Mindy Goldstein, Director of the Turner Environmental Law Clinic at Emory University. That takes us now to the Q&A portion of the call. I want to emphasize again that the Q&A period is for reporters only. Joining us for the Q&A portion of the call today is Ben Schreiber, Climate and Energy Tax Analyst for Friends of the Earth. To ask a question, you may press star and then one on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, you may press star, then two to remove yourself from the queue. We do ask that you please limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know you may rejoin the queue by pressing star and then one. While we're waiting for questions to queue up, I want to make sure you know that you can find the report, memo, and related news release on the web at bit.ly/no-nuke-loans. Again, that's bit.ly/no-nuke-loans. The materials can also be found linked to off the homepage at www.cleanenergy.org under the Hot Topics section. We'll proceed to our first question. The first question comes from Brian Wingfield with Bloomberg News.
Hi, thanks for doing this call. I have to be honest, I had a very tough time going through the documents because there are just so many of them online. I'm wondering if you can point to one specific document that really lays out the argument that you're making that the loan terms have been altered and it kind of explains why there's a delay in issuing this loan guarantee.
So this is Doug. Our focus really was on looking at the conditions that we found in the documents, and I don't think we came out stating that the loan terms have been altered. I think we came out saying instead that some of the loan terms were problematic in terms of their protection of taxpayers against default, and that information is picked up in a series of documents. So what I would encourage you to do is to go through the short report in the section that's of most interest. Just follow that link. Perhaps I'm not understanding your question fully.
I guess the question was, I looked through the documents and I didn't really see a whole lot that struck me as a smoking gun. I'm wondering if you can point it out to me.
So in terms of a smoking gun of interference on the loans, I don't believe that there is one. What we're seeing is interest and involvement by people at political levels to expedite the loans. And I want to be clear that we are not alleging wrongdoing in that area, but we are concerned about political involvement and direct contact between high levels of the agencies and the borrowers. We do not know how that played out. We do not know how or if it affected the loan terms. And we hope that other people will be able to get less restricted access to some of the documents to see if there are issues there that require that type of follow-up.
Okay. Thanks.
This is Sarah Barzak with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Thanks, Doug. And just to clarify, and I'm sure Brian was looking at the there's two online indexes. One of the indexes is very vast, and it has the timeline of what's been going on over the last several years and then a zillion documents, many of them hundreds of pages, some of them, you know, nearly fully redacted. And then there is a separate link that's to this online index for the Synapse EarthTrack report that corresponds to the footnotes that they reference specific excerpts of those documents. So the benefit is I would look at that smaller collection file and click on those, and then instead of looking at 100 pages, you're only going to have to look at like half a page that was actually referenced in the report that Doug and Max co-authored. So just to clarify the two different versions of the index.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you. Next, we'll proceed to our next question from Ryan Tracy with Dow Jones.
Hey, guys. Thanks for doing the call. I want to home in on this credit subsidy issue. You were throwing out a series of numbers, and I guess it gets confusing because there are different, that there's more than one loan guarantee and more than one company involved. But can we just go back over that again, and could you just explain sort of what you see as the disagreement over the credit subsidy, and how recently has that continued? I mean, how, what's the latest indication that is still something that's an area that they haven't, agreed on?
Sure. This is Doug again. So as I noted, there are five separate conditional agreements that were released in 2010, and there were five different credit subsidy ranges that were released at that time as well. So they vary quite widely. Georgia Power has about 0.5% to 1.5% of the borrowing. The MEAG special purpose investment vehicles are higher at around 6 to 11%. One of the striking things that we saw in the released documents is that we did see evolution and continued negotiation on the loan terms. We did not see any updates of the credit subsidy numbers, and verified with DOE in their most recent release that according to them there have been no formal updates of those numbers. So that would imply that the 2010, early 2010 figures still apply. There may be less formal negotiations on what those values will be, but a big concern that I have is that these estimates that were done before the credit subsidy model was even completed created a range based on market conditions at that time, and DOE may feel obligated that they can't ever go above that range, and that would be a problem. So the Georgia Power risk premium here is extremely low and unlikely to provide any material protection to taxpayers should there be a default.
And this is Max Chang. Ryan, the ranges are actually provided on Table 1 of the report. You'll find the low estimate and the high estimate for each of the five loan guarantees.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, DOE told you that there had been no updates. How and when did they do that?
That was in the most. Oh, go ahead, Sarah.
This is Mindy Goldstein with the Turner Environmental Law Clinic, and I can answer that for you. We filed subsequent FOIA requests with both the Department of Energy and Office of Management and Budget, asking for any updates or new documents related to changes in the credit subsidy estimates. And as recently as early this month, both OMB and DOE confirmed that they have no records related to any changes in the credit subsidy fee estimates.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Let's proceed now to our next question from Christy Schwartz with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Hi. So what is the next step as a matter of you all just staying on top of what's going on? Are you planning on trying to take any additional action? What's the next step for you guys?
Sure. This is, I think several of us might respond to this question. This is Sarah Barzak with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. You know, before we had this analysis, we and some of the documentation that we finally got, although some of it, as you realize, is still very heavily redacted, we didn't even know what we didn't know, so to speak. And so now we do know there are real concerns, and we can look to see what those next steps are. For instance, you know, still pursuing, we have FOIA requests that have not been responded to in a suitable manner. So there are legal steps that can be taken. I think another component here that Doug and Max clearly outlined in the report, especially under the recommendations, is that there are numerous things that raise the eyebrows or should be raising the eyebrows of policymakers dealing with these loan guarantees. And so we, you know, took the time and effort and resources to do some of the preliminary investigation, but there's much more that can be done. And so we're putting this forward as a tool and a starting point for, you know, interested parties to do what they will, which hopefully will be to look at this in a much more close way than what we can tell, at least from these documents, has been done or has not been done, arguably. So I hope that helps some. I don't know if Doug, Mindy, or Max have more to add.
Thanks.
I guess nobody has anything else to add. Operator, we'll proceed to our next question from Pam Russell with CQ Roll Call.
I have two questions. One, just kind of a follow-up on that last question about, you know, reaching out and hoping that lawmakers take a look at this. Have you reached out yet? Have you heard a response to any of the lawmakers who might be looking at these things? Have you presented this report to them?
Yeah, this is Ben with Friends of the Earth. We have been working with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle on oversight around this program. And, you know, continue to do so and hope that they take up the recommendations that have been put forth in the report and continue to research how DOE has been implementing this program. And hopefully they have access to some of the documents that more access than what we've gotten.
Which committees or which lawmakers are you guys working with or hope that might take this up?
I can't name names right now. Some of them have been doing it confidentially. But, you know, I think we've all seen the interest that people have had, not only around Solyndra, but also around the Vogtle project as well.
Okay. And I'm sorry, this really is not related, but the talking about the credit subsidy, I understood that Georgia Power was hesitant to sign on to this loan guarantee because they thought the credit subsidy was too high, and they thought that they could get a better rate through conventional financing. Obviously, they haven't done that. But what would be a conventional financing, you know, what would be equal as far as conventional financing goes, like an equivalent financing term?
This is Doug. I don't know exactly how they would determine what an equal private financing would be. There are not lenders lining up to finance these projects.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Georgia Power has said that they can get better terms or elsewhere, but I think the fact that they haven't done so yet indicates it might not be as easy as they think. Now, clearly, Georgia Power has done debt financing recently. They've done it on very favorable terms. Last August, they raised about $400 million at very low interest rates, less than 1%. But it's important to realize that this is a fundamentally different thing. So their debt last year was for short-term money. It was senior secured debt, so much lower risk to the borrowers and didn't have any of the stigma or risks associated with a large nuclear project like Vogtle does. And, you know, had their initial construction moved forward and been spot on and the costs were in line and the time frame was at or ahead of schedule, I think you would see investors starting to think, well, maybe they can pull this off. But the fact that they've already started to run into problems, I think will make people kind of jump back to the framework that they brought to this from the last rounds of nuclear construction.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll proceed now to our next question from Matt Wald with the New York Times.
Thank you. Actually, that last answer covered part of it. You say on page 2, absent loan guarantees, the construction would be quite different, considerably more expensive if, in fact, possible. I had the impression that, in fact, this is going to go ahead without the loan guarantees. Do you stand by the statement that you think that without the loan guarantees, this probably cannot go forward? And also, one other question, which is, on a $6.33 billion loan, what insulates the taxpayer from risk short of a $6.33 billion security payment?
I'm not picking up the second part of that. Could you restate it?
Yeah, on a loan of this size, you said that the payment that is being taken by the DOE or asked for by the DOE for compensating the taxpayer for risk is too small. What would be an adequate payment on a loan of this size?
Okay. So in terms of these questions, my view is that if it is possible for them to get private financing, it will be on less favorable terms. Clearly, there are some elements of this deal structure that I think are in favor of the borrowers. They have a construction cost recovery surcharge in place. They have highly restrictive power purchase agreements that commit members of OPC and MEAG to pay for the power even if there are cost overruns or if the facility doesn't get completed. And they're able to tap into some other tax-favored forms of debt as well. But that said, I think that part of the market is probably still assuming that they're going to tap into the federal government for the big chunk of debt that they're planning to take on, and that if suddenly it becomes clear that not only have they not moved forward on it, but it's no longer an option, I think that the markets would start to reevaluate the capital structure and risk of the borrowers. So they may still be able to get some type of financing, but I don't think that it would be project finance. I don't think that it would be on the level of interest rates that they could get through federal debt. On the other hand, if they are able to do it, as a taxpayer, I would love to see it happen. I would love to see these projects bear their investment costs and for taxpayers not to be at risk for any adverse outcomes. So that would be my preference. In terms of what the appropriate credit subsidy payment would be, I don't know. There's a very complicated set of factors that go into it, and one of the challenges that we have is that those factors, there was clearly disagreement. We don't know how wide the disagreement was or how it was resolved. We do know that in the specific case of Georgia Power, the way that their credit subsidy came out was kind of an offhand response that Secretary Chu made at a press event, and then that was sort of the range that went forward. It seems unlikely that these levels are high enough, and as a taxpayer and in terms of looking for transparency on programs that are putting the federal government at risk for such large loans to single industrial facilities, I would really like to see a much more robust credit review process and some ability for independent analysts to look and see what's going on with values.
Do you think that this is what Congress had in mind when it passed the $17.5 billion loan guarantee fund?
Do I think that they had in mind doing large finances for new reactors?
Yeah.
I think some of them absolutely did. I mean, they were originally 3 years ago looking to have pots of money in excess of $100 billion to build new reactors. So yes, some of them did. I think that some of the bankruptcies that we've seen and the general meltdown in credit markets have made them rethink this. I think that the declining prices of natural gas and the undercutting of power prices because of that have made some of them rethink that. And I would also say that my view personally, and not as a member of Congress, is that these type of programs are pretty high risk and not a great use of government money.
It's also been well documented that there are things that, you know, DOE has done in implementing this program that Congress definitely didn't intend, and one of those is giving up the right of first lien, as well as, you know, there's OMB guidance that suggests that they shouldn't give out a loan guarantee for more than 80% of the total cost of the loan, so that the borrower has to have skin in the game. And so there are clearly things in the way that DOE has been implementing this program that put taxpayers at risk and were not what Congress intended.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll proceed to our next question now from Hannah Northey with Greenwire.
Hi, thanks for doing this call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I wanted to know, if you can help us here, are there legal implications, or is this a matter of the Obama administration contradicting itself on its policy that career employees will decide the merits of a loan guarantee? You said that you're not implying any. Doesn't sound like you're implying any wrongdoing. What could happen here?
This is Doug. This is an area I hope other people will investigate. I'm not an attorney. We don't have a lot of the documents that would probably be needed to assess what went on. I think on the Solyndra loan guarantee, there was a lot of discovery that happened as a result of congressional action, and I hope that some people in Congress will view that as useful to do for this loan guarantee as well.
Yeah, this is Mindy Goldstein with the Turner Environmental Law Clinic. I think that's exactly right. Right now, we don't have enough information to conclude that there are any legal problems. There certainly could be, but there's a lot more investigation that would need to be required, and a bunch more documents would need to kind of be uncovered before we would know. So right now, I think the bigger concerns are policy concerns and the risk that taxpayers are being put on right now.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. We'll proceed now to a question from Jeffrey Beatty with the Energy Daily.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this. I have two questions. The first is about the notion of updating the credit subsidy fee. And my question is, are you merely saying that that would be a logical and the proper thing to do, or are you saying that there is some rule or piece of legislation that requires that to happen? And my second question is, you talked about a request, I think, from Shaw to the Labor Department about waiving prevailing wage rates. I wondered if you could just reiterate what document contains that stuff.
This is Max Chang. As far as updating the credit subsidy fee, I think that's just generally a good practice, especially considering that these fees were released in January of 2010 and have not yet been updated, and we're now in 2013. With regards to the second, actually the footnotes for the Davis-Bacon prevailing wage issues are sort of highlighted in the report in the specific footnotes. You can click onto that. And then also, you might be interested in looking at the second set of documents of the draft loan agreement itself. I think there's a lot of language regarding Davis-Bacon in the draft loan agreement, and that document is also available on the library.
This is Doug. My recollection from the wider range of documents on prevailing wage is that Shaw was not pushing for the exemptions as much as Georgia Power was, and that I think Shaw had to be convinced and they had to work through some issues that potentially involved some jobs on the same site being subject to Davis-Bacon and some not being subject to it. One of the interesting elements of this whole issue is that there was quite a few emails going back and forth that seemed to be leading to some type of a waiver from the prevailing wage laws for at least some of the work that was going to go on site. But if you read the term sheets, it's difficult to see that there are waivers in there. So an open question in my mind is whether in the end DOE reversed itself and didn't give a waiver, or if there is a waiver, but it's hidden somewhere in the language saying that, you know, you must comply with all relevant Davis-Bacon requirements, but people just know that for a specific project there's some waivers and there's some waiver letter in there that we haven't seen.
Okay, and I'm sorry, and who was that talking? Was that Max?
That was Doug.
Doug, okay. Thank you.
We'll proceed to our next question now from Orlando Montoya with Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, yes. You've said that these documents, quote, shed light on, quote, worrying problems and that you have, quote, real concerns, but I haven't heard any new concerns or accusations. I mean, if you're saying this is risky, you've said that before. Can I get a clear answer, maybe Sarah, what is new? What are the accusations? Where are they in the documents? Thank you.
Sure. This is Sarah Barzak with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I think part of the issue here is back in May of 2012, when we reached a settlement with DOE and received some of the documents we requested, some in more unredacted form, is we had to do an analysis and bring in experts such as Synapse and EarthTrack to look at what was buried in there. You know, a layman's look at what we received raised eyebrows, but now we have confirmation that, you know, there are indications of political involvement in the process that we believe needs to be looked into more. We have confirmation, and this was a big one that, and already pointed out in the call so far, is several years later, the credit subsidy payments fees have not apparently changed, and that's in light of major shifts that have occurred, which none of us have mentioned, but it's in the report, the Fukushima reactor accidents in Japan, which certainly have affected the nuclear industry. And, you know, this is an apples to oranges comparison, but I know many people have tried to refinance their houses or get loans over the last couple of years for a mortgage, and you have to provide very up-to-date information on what the status is of you and your spouse or your family's employment and how long you've been working somewhere and all kinds of details, and that's for something much smaller. And again, it's an apples to oranges comparison, but we are not seeing that the proper review of the changing conditions, and Orlando, you're very familiar with this because you're in Georgia, the Vogtle project back in 2010 was being championed as, you know, this rebirth of the nuclear industry, that it was, you know, on schedule, on budget. And now we know that there is at least a 15-month delay in the first reactor coming online, and there is a $900-plus million cost increase that is being litigated through multiple lawsuits between the consortium partners. So I think the issue here is we had to do an analysis and see what is really in there. And, you know, I feel that the report does clearly point out key issues. I don't know if any of the report authors would like to maybe emphasize what they really felt was was new when they actually were given the time and resources to look through these. So,
sure. This is Doug. I guess I'll just raise one example. One of the key protections for the taxpayer is this whole issue of a credit subsidy payment. This also has important signaling to the markets and to the borrowers. And I was struck by, number one, the fact that the vast majority of that work was done outside of DOE. Number two, that the credit subsidies that were issued in early 2010 were issued based on a model that was still going through significant evolution and revision, and that as a result, even for 2010, I don't have very much confidence that the figures that came out of it were meaningful or accurate. To me, that's a big problem.
And this is Max. I want to also add that in the second set of documents dating from 2012, we still have indications that, at least with Georgia Power and DOE, they have not come to terms for the loan agreement since the announcement in 2010. So almost 3 years have passed, and there are still negotiations, markups, proposals, and counterproposals. I think that is fairly significant.
All right. We'll proceed now to our next question from Matt Van Dyke with SNL Energy.
Hi. I'm wondering more on the credit subsidy fee and how you all say that the DOE has said that there's no evidence that it's changed, but there's also so all these redactions. Is it possible that there's redacted material that we just don't know about? Because we can't, that would indicate that the credit subsidy fee has changed over time? Or is this assurance that you all apparently got from the DOE, does that imply that it has not been changed? Not just that we don't know if it's been changed or not.
Right. I'll take this. This is Mindy Goldstein with the Turner Environmental Law Clinic. We have, and these are both obviously linked on the online index, we have statements from the Department of Energy and Office of Management Budget saying that they have no new records, not just redacted records, but actually no records exist regarding any changes to the credit subsidy fee after they were issued in 2010. So to me, that's fairly definitive there's no documented evidence of any change. Now, if there were phone calls or things that happened not on paper, obviously we wouldn't know about that. But there are no written records of any change in the possession of either agency.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll proceed to our next question now from Ken Silverstein with Energy Central.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. My question is a little more basic, and I'm really just trying to discern if this is a campaign against the nuclear industry generally, or whether you are just concerned about loan guarantees, and if so, did you express the same sentiment when with some of these clean energy loan guarantees to the solar industry and the wind industry, et cetera?
This is Doug, and I'm happy to take that one. I have been critical of this program since they were proposing the rules. I submitted comments on the rules. I was very concerned about the checks and balances of the program, and I remain concerned. I think after having gone through thousands of pages of FOIA documents, I am still concerned that there are problems with the oversight of the program and with the very significant investments that the government is trying to make in single, often privately owned facilities.
Did you hold press conferences with respect to some of these loans given to clean energy?
So I did not hold a press conference on the Solyndra loan, no. But I will also point out that this is by far the single largest Title 17 loan. It's about 16 times the size of Solyndra.
Mr. Silverstein, this is Sarah Barzak with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. In terms of this Vogtle project, and because we're a clean energy organization based in the southeastern United States, We have been involved in the Vogtle reactor project for quite a while through the Nuclear Regulatory Commission licensing process, and we've also been very active for many years before the Georgia Public Service Commission, and we're currently involved in the 7th Vogtle construction monitoring docket at the Georgia Public Service Commission. And we back in 2004 in the integrated resource plan before the Public Service Commission, we did argue that the nuclear option did not look to us, based on our analysis, as the right direction for Georgia Power to go with its 20-year long-term energy plan. We obviously lost that battle, so to speak. So we do have concerns about new nuclear generation in the state of Georgia as being the most affordable option for Georgia Power ratepayers. But this specific investigation into the loan guarantee and this multi-year Freedom of Information Act effort was done out of consumer concerns. Our work here and the great work that Mindy Goldstein and the Turner Environmental Law Clinic has done and the analysis that Doug and Max have done, that is not going to affect the Vogtle project. It's not going to stop Vogtle 3 and 4. They will, Southern Company and their partners, find out a way to make it happen. So it is just, I wouldn't want, to be perfectly honest, anyone to have to take this on organizationally. It is very difficult. It's just that it became so overwhelmingly frustrating to be dealt with the DOE's sort of secrecy and their lack of sharing very basic information on a huge potential liability that the U.S. taxpayers are going to shoulder, that we really felt compelled that we, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, had to do something to raise this. And that this is what this memo and this report is doing, is the what we could do with the resources we had to provide some information that hopefully others can move forward with and investigate. So it isn't a solar or a nuclear or a whatever argument. It is a fairness to U.S. taxpayers argument that we had to soldier on and do it. And that's the answer.
This is Doug again. Can I guess I would flip it back to you, and I would say, if this loan guarantee were to get anywhere close to the level of attention and analysis and review as the Solyndra defaulted, I would be happy.
All right. It looks like we do not have any more questions at this time. So we want to make sure that you know where to get more information about today's news event. To connect with any of the speakers you've heard from today and get more information about the news event, you can contact Alex Frank at 703-276-3264. As I've mentioned before, you can get the report, memo, and related news release on the web at bit.ly/no-nuke-loans. Again, that's bit.ly/no-nuke-loans. The materials can also be found linked to off the homepage at www.cleanenergy.org under the Hot Topics section. A streaming audio replay of this news event will also be available as of 5 p.m. Eastern Time today. Again, you've been listening to a news conference sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Thank you for joining us. That concludes today's news event.